Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am very honored with our guest today, but I'm going to do my whole spiel first, and then we will get to our guest. So hashtag no limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms itself into the butterfly. As if that was not difficult enough, then it does need to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order to be strong enough to fly. That's not an easy task. Of all of the guests that I have had to date, my guest today has probably come the closest to dissolving into cells and reforming. There will be a graphic picture that I will show later on. I just want to give you the heads up about that, because what happened to John is extraordinary and very scary, and I'm going to let him do all of the sharing about that. So, John, thank you so very much for coming on hashtag No Limits. Give the audience just a little bit about yourself.
First of all, hi, Shelley. So hi. It is a joy to be on your show, and for the listeners and viewers, hello to all of you guys and ladies and friends. A spiel about myself. We'll start here. I am married. I'm married an occupational therapist who works with kids who have special needs. Her name is Elizabeth Grace. We call her Beth. She's awesome. She's brilliant. She's beautiful. She has helped me flourish. So I love her and I'm wild about her. She gave me 4 kids. So I'm a dad of 4. I'm a son to a man with Parkinson's disease named Denny O'Leary, who is just my inspiration. His caretaker is his wife and my amazing mom. Her name is Susan. She's brilliant. I have 5 siblings. I'm a speaker and a writer and a coach and a podcast host and have a lot of other roles, but primarily just profoundly grateful for the life I get to lead. Not easy most days, but it's a really good life.
Yeah. And I so appreciate that you started off talking about your wife, because as a wife, that would be such an honor if when my husband is introduced, he starts to talk about me, because that just would show the love and admiration that he and I have for each other. And so I very much appreciate that. And the fact that, this is a show, typically my guests are talking about their child or they themselves who've had a disability and how they have busted through limits that, you know, people have set upon them. And so the fact that your wife is an occupational therapist, as a former special education teacher, I learned so much and had such great admiration for the OTs and the CODAs that I worked with. And they do phenomenal work. And so tell her thank you for me, because I can't imagine what it's been like these last few years during this pandemic. I left teaching about 5 years ago, and it was difficult then to do everything that we needed to do. I can't even fathom what it must be like now. So yes, John, tell us why you're here today. Why did I reach out to you to tell your story?
Well, hopefully we'll figure that out together as little butterflies fly forward. But I think the primary story of my life that's most stunning and most tragic and ultimately most redemptive is at age 9, I was in a house fire. And it's a shocking moment. But at age 9, I got burned on 100% of my body. And 87% of those burns were third degree. It happened in a gasoline explosion in my garage. Shelley, you know the story, but in short, I'll give a little bit of the background. A week earlier, I saw kids in my neighborhood playing with fire and gasoline. And just observing these little boys, I figured if they could do it, so could I. So that weekend, my mother's out with a couple of my sisters. My father was at work. The house was mine. I walked into the garage, bent over a can of gasoline, poured a little bit of gas on top of a piece of paper that was lit with fire. And before the liquid even touched the flame, the fumes created this massive explosion that split the can in two, launched me 20 feet against the far side of the garage, set my world on fire. You talked about that butterfly cocoon experience. This was it for me. I'm trapped in a garage. I'm covered in gasoline. I don't know which way is up. I don't know what has happened. I know that I'm on fire. I know that I'm scared. I know that I'm in trouble. And I just panicked and I ran. and a story that I very seldom share, but I want to make sure our listeners and viewers recognize how little John did for himself. I'm the recipient of grace and leadership and love and vision. But my brother Jim actually eventually hears the screams at first from the garage, and then eventually I make my way back into the house, stand on top of a rug burning, just screaming for a hero. And I see my brother Jim coming toward me. He's 17, I'm 9, and I'm watching this guy come toward me thinking, you know, God, anybody else, not him. He can't fix what's wrong with me. He's my older brother. And yet this was his moment to step forward and to shine himself. So that day, my brother Jim picked up a rug. He beat down the flames that were leaping 2.5 feet off of me. He wrapped me in that rug, carried me outside, rolls around on top of me, runs back into the house, calls 911. Long story, tragic story, made very short. 1987, the lifesaver of the year for the state of Missouri was not a Navy SEAL, was not some police officer, a great special ed teacher. The lifesaver of the year was a 17-year-old pimple-faced, selfish jerk brother named Jane, who he himself changed. So I want to make sure on the front side of our conversation, we don't wait for John to show us how he became a butterfly. But the cool thing is, in going through this tragic experience, those around me went through their own metamorphosis. They went through their own transformation. And in doing so well, they not only changed themselves, but they changed me.
Wow. That's so awesome. Such a beautiful dedication to your brother. And just, you know, because it is, while the butterfly and the caterpillar go through this by themselves, we as humans don't. We're not meant to, I don't believe. And, you know, the fact that you can honor your brother in that way, and I would be interested, and maybe he shared this with you, what were his thoughts when he saw you coming at him?
Yeah, it's a stunning story, really. And it's so emotional that it will require a stiff drink and some Kleenexes nearby. But here it is. When he heard the explosion, he wasn't sure what had happened. And sure. then he heard the screams and he recognized something was wrong, but he still doesn't know what happened. Right. And then he smells smoke and he gets a sense for generally like something happened, but he doesn't know to whom and where. And so he's sleeping in the basement that morning, January 17th, 1987, comes from the basement where he slept. But, you know, we have a nice house, but too many kids, 6 kids, sleeping all over the place, man. Pick a closet and go to bed. Right. So in the basement sleeping. He's the oldest. He's made that his room. He then comes through the basement steps, now into the smoke. He looks to his right. That's the source of the screams. And I'm on top of a rug just screaming for a savior, a helper. And he runs without even pausing. You know, normally you have to pass go. He doesn't. He just runs right toward me. And, you know, if listeners, like, I don't know what you do during difficult moments, but I normally run from them. That's the normal thing to do when the bombs start falling. And I think part of the movement, as we have followed what's taken place in the Ukraine, is to choose to stay present with our brothers and sisters, with our spouses and children, to remain present in the midst of a storm. That's what he's about to do. He comes into this fight with me. He picks up the rug. It's the one you're supposed to wipe your feet on, races over to me, beats down, trying to put out the flame, swings twice and then a third time. And then I remembered he pulls back the rug. Pulls back, Shelley. He drops the rug because he burned himself. And when we touch something hot, what we naturally do is we drop it.
Right.
And what is totally unnatural, and it is ultimately what he chose to do, and it is a choice. He comes back into the fight, recognizing it's not about him. He picks back up the rug, steps back over to me, this little man, 9 years old, burning in front of him, and he swings down a fourth time, and then a fifth time, and then a sixth time, and then a seventh time for 2 minutes, burning himself. I mean, this is an incredible hero's movement, saving my life, risking his own life in doing so. And so, yeah, it was not an easy, well, he quickly put out the fire, and then what happened? No, it was not easy and it was not painless, but nothing good in life is. Your example of the caterpillar and the butterfly is apropos. Like, nothing worthwhile, no goal, no dream, no child, nothing worthwhile is actually easy, but it is ultimately worthy, and it is not worth waiting for someone else to do it. We are called to be that change agent for good.
Yeah. That's phenomenal. I'm picturing what you're saying, but I can't imagine. You know, I had a situation growing up where my brother was a hero and kept our dad alive in a situation where our dad and him were out in the woods. They were chopping firewood. A tree fell and just sliced my dad from one side to the other. And my brother, he was 13 at the time. And it was just him and my dad. They were 6 miles away from civilization at the time. And my brother ended up having to get him, brought him back, drove a truck, a stick shift, 13 years old, drove it the 6 miles back to civilization, which was our home. And then, you know, basically carried him into the house and then called the ambulance. And I mean, he talks about that too. Like,
yes.
I just reacted. I didn't think. I just knew that something had to be done, and I was the one who was going to have to do it.
Mm. Well, so, you grow up quick during these moments, and your brother certainly did, and my brother certainly did as well. What examples they are.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some awesome big brothers to look up to in more ways than one. My brother's 6'4", so I have to look up to him physically too.
And the beautiful thing about both stories, 6'4" brothers and mine, who's closer to 6 foot, they are imperfect. They say stupid things. They make big mistakes. They are far from being angelic saints. And yet in their actions, and ideally, as we draw the line back to ours, there are moments and evidence of selflessness, of sacrifice, of vision, of metamorphosis, of change, transformation, and just righteous acts of good. And that's why I love our story so much, is because going into it, none of us seemed like we would become the heroic type. We're a Midwest family, ordinary, middle class, fight all the time at dinner time, elbows on the table. And yet through this experience, my brother stepped forward, my sisters in unbelievable ways stepped forward, and a mother and dad who had been through nothing difficult, nothing like that at least, showed the way of what it looked like when you embrace a struggle and then take the best of it going forward and transform it.
Yeah. So the accident has happened. The ambulance comes. Everybody's at the hospital. What was your chance of survival?
Right. So medically in 2022, the way they work the odds is they take the percentage of the body burned. So we can do math at home. Grab your child's pen and here we go. 100%. That's how bad the burn was. 100%. They add your age. So for me, 9. And they've got mortality. So in 2022, there's 109% likelihood of this child dying.
Right.
So 35 years ago, you know, the odds were just nil. There was no pragmatic possibility of this little boy surviving.
Yeah. And here you are 35 years later. So I am going to share your website really quickly. And it starts off with, and I'm going to scroll up, but this, I had to put this first because I talk about this, that I'm, you know, trying to make the world better for all, one IEP at a time. And it's kind of different wording, but the same concept. Together we can change the world, starting with our own. And I loved that saying, and you have so many of them here, but I want to scroll up to, and this is your website. It is johnolearyinspires.com. And so here is you prior to, I'm guessing you were a lot younger than 9 in this picture.
Right. I was a small 9-year-old. No, I'm, yeah. So in that picture, I would imagine.
Yeah. And so if I'm giving you a chance, if you're watching and you want to look away, because this is the picture, I presume this is you the first night in the hospital.
That's right. Taking the day of.
Okay. Yeah. So anybody look away. Oops. Okay. The picture is gone. And now we have another picture. Do you know approximately how long this one was after the accident?
Yes, that's getting close to homecoming. So that's about 5 months into recovery. And the picture you saw a moment ago from that you covered up appropriately quickly just scratches the surface at the tragedy, the difficulty that burn patients face. And I almost look at our story as like secondhand tone at this point in my life. You know, I'm 45 years old. So, I don't even feel like I'm that little guy anymore, but I do know what it's like to visit little patients. And I do know what it's like to go through an experience like that. And when I experience it now, I experience it primarily through the lens of the patients currently facing it, through the family members loving them in the midst of it, and through the staff members who keep showing up daily to guide them forward through a horrific difficulty. It's not a quick fix, and it's not fun, and it's not pain-free. It's extremely difficult, and you are not paid enough, whether you are the parents of that child or the OTs, the PTs, the special ed teachers, the nurses, the CNAs, the RNs. No one's paid enough to do this work. And so then you ought to ask yourself, why do it? You know, really, why do this? Why show up for a child who's not supposed to live? Why go into the IEPs for a child whose life is going to be filled with challenges? Why do this work? And that's when it comes around to mission. This idea that miracles still happen, that every life does indeed matter, and together we can make a mighty difference. And it does start one life at a time. And usually it starts with a reflection in the mirror. So when I look at that picture, whether it's the one with the little boy in the wheelchair 5 months into recovery, or that picture taken in OR the day of, I am in awe that a doctor stepped in and imagined that he could do something about this. That support staff stepped in and said, you know what? It's unlikely, but we're going to do the work. That a mom and dad who weren't trained for this and weren't prepped for this would step in that day and the following and then the following. And through all those heartbreaking, sleepless nights, as they're going through their own fire experience, and they kept coming back and serving that little boy through it all. So like for me, I'll put it to you this way. I wrote a book 5 years ago called On Fire. And when they first came up with the cover art, there was a picture of me wearing a suit, you know, tie, looking, you know, staring right at the reader saying, people, look what I've done. You can do likewise. So I made them redo the cover art because I'm not the star of the story. So when you look at a picture of On Fire now, it's actually like smoky mirror. It's called foiled image. It's a foil wrap on the front of the book so that when you look at On Fire or the words John O'Leary, you don't see John's great. You look at the fire and you see the foil wrap and you actually see a reflection of your own, because we are calling out of people what is possible in their lives. So I love the design that they've ultimately landed on, because we remind our readers that this story is about them and the work that they do and the ability they have through their lives to be change agents, to be miracle workers for those they serve.
You are so humble about all of this. And I very much appreciate that about you, because you certainly could make this, you know, all about you and how tragic it was. And I love this attitude, which I'm guessing is where Live Inspired, your podcast name, comes from. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But I want to continue to talk about that journey that you faced. Can you remember? So you said 5 months, 6 months ish that you were in the hospital. Can you remember some of the things that you were thinking your life was going to be like from that point forward?
Yeah. I mean, so it's odd because there's like years of my life. I don't know if I remember a moment from them. Like, what happened to my 20s? My goodness. But that age 9 year, it seems I almost remember a bit of every day. So I remember it in great detail, the bandage changes and the blood technicians coming in and getting sick every night and the itchiness. I don't know why, but when your skin starts growing back, it is intolerably itchy, and the inability to communicate because they had a trach. Early days, the first couple of months, the swelling was so intense. My eyes were swollen shut. So I remember all those experiences, but I also remember the good ones. The visitors coming by, my mom and dad being there at my side day after day, the Hall of Fame announcers and the football players and the St. Louis Blues hockey players and the baseball Cardinals players, and letters that came in from Ronald Reagan and Nancy and Pope John Paul II, and stories of people in Israel planting trees in our behalf. And then they start bringing in box loads of letters from school age kids around the country. And like, oh, that was inspiring. So yeah, I remember all that. You asked specifically, though, about, do you remember what you thought your life would look like? Yes. Two things about that. Number one is I knew I would get out. It was very clear that this was not going to be the final chapter. And I credit my mom. You know, the humility you feel is not faked or feigned. It's just it's just recognizing how unimportant I am in all of this. So like I am the benefactor and the recipient of amazing grace and love and leadership. And my mom is part of that. So she came in on day one and told me she loved me. And I remember as a little boy looking up through, you know, these little eyes saying, "Mama, knock it off with the love. Am I going to die? Am I going to die?" And she looked at me and said really boldly, "Do you want to?" You know, your whole hashtag, no limits. Ultimately, you've got to get people in a position where they can decide and determine to have no limits for themselves. That's the ultimate call of an IEP or of leadership or vision, so that you eventually step out of the room and they can see it for themselves. So I looked at my mom and I said to her, "Mom, I don't want to die. Jeez, I want to live." And she says, "Good. Then take the hand of God. Walk the journey with him, but fight like you never fought, ever before in your entire lives. Your father and I will be with you, but you've got to fight, John." So on day one, I made a commitment. You said about that you have vision. Yeah, I had a vision of fighting forward to go home. That was the one vision I had. And we got there. But the difficulty was, and you know this from your old days of working in the classroom, as great as it was to get home, it did not get easier. I still, you know, for the viewers, I don't have fingers. They were amputated in hospital. They haven't grown back. I can't get out of the wheelchair back then. My skin has been profoundly changed. And so all of the skin on my body, you talked about the cell metamorphosis. Every single bit of my skin from my neck down comes from my scalp. So they took layer from skin from my scalp, piecing me back together piece by piece, slowly giving a little boy back a chance at life. But what kind of life is this? I can't do anything. So I'm a victim to my circumstances. I have plenty of limits, all of them self-imposed. Now you could argue, well, yeah, true. But you also got burned and you're in pain and you can't move through this. True. But the greatest challenge that I had as a child was recognizing in my own mind's eye, my life is over. So I'm 9, I'm home, I live, but what life is this? Right. And so this is when my beautiful mom steps in, and she's a history teacher, third grade history teacher, but also toughened by raising 6 kids. So she made a phone call to a teacher that I think changed my life. She called a piano teacher. This woman taught music in our school growing up. And Mrs. Bartello comes into my home. The house has been rebuilt. The teacher walks into the room. My mother looks at me, and I look up at her and I say, "Mom, what is she doing here?" And the cool thing is my mother did not say a word. Instead, she just, Shelly, walks into the room, bends down next to me, unhooks the brakes of my wheelchair, rolls me away from the pity party. I've been there long enough. At some point, you got to bust out, takes me down a hallway. I look up halfway down the hallway and I say, "Mom, where are you taking me?" Not a word, Shelly. There's power and silence. She takes me into the living room, locks the brakes, walks out. A piano teacher walks in, puts her arm around me, and she says this beautiful language in 2022. We need it with what has taken place in the Ukraine and in schools and in families and with racism and injustice and challenges personally. It's everywhere. It is everywhere. We need these words. I heard them 35 years ago, but maybe you need to hear them today. So the words the teacher said to me were these, looking in my eye, arm around me, said, "John, this is going to be really, really, really hard. It just is. Welcome to life. And we can do it together." So I'll say that one more time, and then I'll tell you what she did and pass the mic to you.
So true and beautiful.
Hey, it's going to be hard. It just is. Welcome to life. But we can do it together. And then Shelly, she takes a little pen out of her purse, puts it on my broken, useless, damaged, fingerless, good for nothing hand. That's how I viewed it. And I promise you, I'm not the only one that viewed it that way. There are many people who would have viewed a child disfigured in a wheelchair as being washed up. But this teacher did not. She saw the promise of his potential. She put a pen on the damaged hand, seeing that it was about to fall off, grabbed 3 rubber bands, tethered the pen to my hand. Now the pen's on solid. And now a little boy with seemingly no real chance at possibility is playing the piano with a pen. And then the teacher came back the following day and the following day for 5 years. So when you talk about the humility on the call, it's because I recognize very clearly how fortunate I was to have phenomenal teachers and parents and siblings and grandparents and strangers and presidents and athletes and coaches and blood technicians and therapists come into our life and say, we believe in you. We believe in you. And at some point, you've got to believe in yourself.
Yeah.
So they were the first ones to see no limits in me. And eventually I started to believe that vision.
That is so touching. And I see that so often. And I've had so many students come to me that they didn't have the physical burn that you had, but they had been burned on their heart by so many people telling them that you're not good enough. I mean, they don't use those direct words, you're not good enough, but in the actions that these staff of schools and medical professionals and family members and I felt like for many of my students, it was teaching them first that they were valuable exactly the way they are.
Yes.
And getting them to believe in themselves again. And I mean, these kids, when I would get them, would be anywhere from kindergarten to fourth grade in most instances. And to think that we have, as a society, beat these kids down so much already is just heart-wrenching to me. And I've had several of them tell me that I was the first person to believe in them outside of their mom and dad.
Yes.
And sometimes I was the first person ever. And
yes.
I'm so thankful for those moments. And I'm so thankful that you had, it sounds like a whole slew of people.
Yes.
Surrounding you and constantly telling you that your life was still valuable and that you had great things to share. And they were right. I mean, what I've seen of you, I mean, we don't know each other personally, but you have done amazing things with what happened to you. And I'm so, so impressed because it wasn't an easy journey by any stretch. So go ahead.
Yeah. And I'll just echo what you're saying. First of all, regarding the journey, again, nothing worthwhile is. And in an Amazon Prime era where when you order the ear pods, if they don't show up that night, you're wondering what in the world is wrong with those people. Patience is a virtue and persistence is a virtue and vision is a virtue and selflessness and sacrifice and waiting. These are things that are meaningful and your great grandparents knew it and yeah. their parents and their, but we are at profound risk of losing sight of that. So yeah. I was fortunate to go through that. I was also fortunate like you to have these teachers show up in my life. And what I was just thinking as you were speaking and sharing those stories is how cool also to not to know when you're part of someone's miracle. Like you don't know which word is going to be the one that turns the light on in the room.
Yeah.
You don't know. So if that's true, but if you also recognize, but something will, something I do up here in the front of the classroom or with this child or with that family or in the parking lot might matter. Then what you start to do is you treasure every moment and you treat them as if they're sacred, and they are. So you're not wasting your time. You're actually fully living your life. And so I think it's really cool that we as human beings can make a mighty difference in others, and we don't know what difference that is when it's happening. So that now yeah. we're called to show up mightily.
And we certainly have the ability to do it in a positive way. And unfortunately, we have the ability to do it in a negative way too.
Yes.
And I'm guessing, maybe I'm wrong, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm guessing you had some situations from when that accident happened until today where people didn't treat you as great as they should have. And they did cast you aside. yeah.
I'll go in a different direction. One of my stories that I almost never share, but it's relevant in particular to your audience. In our church service, there's a moment where you extend your hand and offer peace to the people around you.
Oh, sure.
I was about 10 years old when this was happening, out of the hospital, standing back at school. Life was okay. But I also knew I was different. And if I'm being really honest, probably less than other people. So I'm shaking hands with my dad. Again, I don't have fingers for the people listening. Shaking hands with my mom and five siblings. And it's just like that fun moment with family. Then you turn to the people in front of you and around you, and it's all good. And most people in that community knew me. But I remember that day turning around to the guy behind me. And he had a beard. He was a giant man, barrel chested. And I extended my right hand. He extended his right hand. Then he looked down and saw my right hand. And then he withdrew his right hand. Then he crossed his arms and looked away. And I'm 10, and this is now 34 years of experiencing this. Right. But I still remember what it was like to be rejected like that. I still remember turning away from that and away from that pew, and in some regards, even away from that service. Angry, recognizing not only what he did, but that he was right. So like, if you don't think your actions or your words or your eye rolls or whatever else don't have an effect on someone else, it's only because you're dense. You're not paying attention to what's happening in someone else's life. You're not being empathetic at all. And my mother picked up on the fact that day that something had changed in church. So this is just the beauty of a mother and motherly love for the dads and the men in the room too. I'm talking to everybody. But this beautiful lady picked up on it, and I showed her what happened, and I told her what had happened, and I reminded her how it made me feel. And she said to me, John, never let the way someone else glances at you, leans towards you, or pull away from you influence the beauty and the dignity of your life. Never let someone else's reaction to you ever, ever demean you. Never, ever. She said, from now on, when you have an opportunity of saying hello, you extend your right hand, and then you pull forward with your left hand, their hand, and you just pull them in. You don't let them go, man. They don't have a say in the matter anymore, because you know who you are. You know whose you are, and you're not going to let them take the baby way out. So from that day on, and if you've ever met me live, you've experienced this. When someone says hello to me for the first time, they're coming in for the hug. They may be wearing a mask. They may be 6 feet distancing due to COVID, but I'm coming in for the hug, and I do not let them out. Not because of them, but because of me, because of my dignity and the way we are going to do life together. And so I want people to recognize, I don't care. I'm not defined by these amputations or these scars, and I don't want you to define me by them either. And so in a market that seems to be building up walls around all of our differences and breaking it down to the lowest common denominator, man, I'm trying to break through that. I want to come together with people and do life well together going forward.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I applaud that thinking, because that's kind of what I'm trying to do with this show. I wrote a book, and I hold on one second. I can't believe it's kind of out of my reach. But for those who are listening, you're not going to see this, but it's called Those Who Can't Teach. And I had the opportunity to share the stories of 9 different individuals and families who have special needs and tell their journey, because I want to share how normal most of their life is. And I put normal in air quotes, because what is normal and who wants to be normal? But there's so much about somebody who is different that is so much the same. And that's from that book, kind of, is where hashtag No Limits stemmed from. Because when the pandemic hit, I thought, well, okay, what am I going to do now? I can't like be out promoting my book in person anymore. So, and there are millions and millions of stories like the ones in my book. And so trying to change people's perspectives so that they can see that every person is a person before anything else.
Right.
And that everyone deserves dignity and respect. And that you don't have to like every single person on the planet. You don't have to be friends with every single person. And I'm really excited by the way that your mom said to you, don't worry about what they think, because it isn't about them. It's about you. And to have her not say, oh gosh, I'm so sorry that happened to you, and it's never going to happen again. That's not reality. The reality is there are always, unfortunately, going to be people who, for whatever reason, withdraw from other people. And so for her to just say, don't worry about that. It's going to happen. Here's how you deal with it. But to try to get, you know, like I said before, just a few minutes ago, the doctors, the medical staff, the teachers, the family, the neighborhood, whatever, just treat everybody like a person first.
Right. When, can I just echo that for a moment? My mom recently fell and broke her wrist and had some other health complications and happened to be hospitalized where I was treated and happened to be on the same floor, believe it or not, where I was treated. And then from her room was the waiting room where they waited outside of every surgery and bandage change and everything else where they were kicked away from me. That was the room. So we could see the very room that was so monumental and unchanged, by the way. Same paint color, same chairs.
Oh, my gosh.
It's been cleaned, but it was the exact same room. And so she and I were talking about people who dramatically influenced her. And I'm sharing the story because sometimes when you hear a story like the one you and I are talking about, it's so grandiose in some regards. So I wanted to share my mother's response to a question when I said, Mom, who had the greatest impact on you of all the visitors? And again, these are Hall of Famers and ball players and celebrities and the who's who of the 1980s swung by and visited this poor little boy dying. And she saw them all and she was greeted by them all and she was inspired by them all, which was why her story was so meaningful when she said, John, the darkest day of my life was when they took your fingers and we walked out of your room that night. I walked out, she said. I walked out of your room that night at about 12 o'clock. And I did not know how you would respond. I did not know if you would be there when I came back the following day. And we'd been going through this epic journey for 3 months. And I wasn't sure if it was still worth it. And I was just losing hope and losing steam. And I was just totally on the end of the rope hanging down. And she said, so she comes through the burn center, double doors. They open up. She is now crying in the hallway by herself. There's no one there at midnight. Walks past this waiting room to go down to where she stays. And in the waiting room, it's darkened. There was one little lamp on, and it was this one guy named Don Lee. Don Lee was a junior year English teacher for my brother. And he wasn't sure how to make it better for the O'Learys. He didn't have a whole lot of money. He didn't have a whole lot of connections. He didn't have all that stuff that some other people had, but he could serve through the gift of presence. So every night he would just grade papers in this waiting room. I get emotional, man, because this is life here, life and death in the balance. And here he is that night grading papers in a darkened room. She walks out. She's broken. She looks up. He's there. She walks over to him and just collapses in his arms, this young 26-year-old English teacher. Wow. And so I'm like, well, Mom, what did he say? You know, how did he make it right? And that's when she said, oh, it wasn't what he said. I don't remember him saying anything. It's the fact that he had the audacity to be their presence in the first place. So teachers and parents and sons and daughters, I don't think you need to be a celebrity. I don't think you need to be able to coalesce a couple sentences in perfect order. I think the call of humanity is to go and to show up and to be present and to risk not being used, but on the chance that you are needed, you might quite literally change someone else's life simply by being there. And so that's the kind of work that we can do, and we can do it well.
That is incredible. I mean, I could see some teacher doing it, you know, to like 9, 10 o'clock at night, but to still be there at midnight. And, you know, it was just for such a time as this, right? I mean, there's just, oh goodness. And your whole life is filled with stories like that. Those inspirational stories, and which again is why you have your podcast, why you've written your book, and how you have beautifully morphed from that caterpillar into this butterfly that is internationally known. So you're literally flying all over the world, or at least you were before the pandemic. Yeah. I guess you still do.
I usually use airplanes. My arms aren't that.
Your wings just can't carry that. Airplanes
get me where I need to go.
Yeah, and it's because of how you have taken what happened to you and used it to see the good. that's incredible. And I know you know that. And I know I'm not telling you, you know, like I know you don't go around patting yourself on the back.
No need. There are two things that allowed that to happen. The first was when I was getting ready to go back to school, I had had special educators swing by for 18 months to coach me up and teach me up and bring me back to my class slowly. But it meant after a year and a half, I had to go back. And I did not want to, because I knew the other kids would judge me and not like me and everything else that a child might feel after being set aside for 18 months and then returning physically different and seemingly damaged. And my dad, after hearing me complain about like, "Dad, why me?" forever, as we're getting ready to go back to school the night before, I'm yelling at him again, "Dad, why me? Why me?" And eventually this wonderful guy, he's so awesome. He stands up, shuts the bedroom door, but unfortunately comes back into the room. Like, so he shuts the door so no others cannot hear what's about to happen. Walks over to me, kneels in front of me, puts his hands very firmly on my legs, looks me in the eyes and says, "John, darn it, why not you? This terrible thing has happened to you. And if you want, you can be a victim to these circumstances for the rest of your life. Or you can choose to rise above. You can choose, in your language, have no limits. You can choose to soar forward in life." And he said, "John, victim or victor, either way, it's your choice." And then he kissed me on the forehead. He walked out of that room. He never looked back, and neither have I. So this inflection point between becoming a victim or a victor was something my dad said in front of me very clearly as a young boy. And I chose the path that he laid in front of me, this choice to be a victor, to imagine being accepted, to imagine being worthy, to imagine being embraced. And I think it changed the dynamic in the classroom when I came back to school. So that was huge. As a little parenthesis to those in special ed, another thing they did, though, is they had teachers or nurses come into my classroom and educate the students what had happened to John. And they made it seem like when he comes back, he is a hero. Do you have any idea what a champion for life he is? The difficulties he's faced. He met ball players. He saw the radio announcer. He got a letter from Ronald Reagan. Like, they made it seem like this guy was cool. You're going to be lucky to meet him. Any questions for me, the nurse? And they would ask all the questions around his hands or how we can help. And that changed the dynamic in the room itself when I returned. So that is really key, to make sure that the other peers recognize what has happened to a student who may seem different otherwise. So that's a big thing. And the second big thing was when I was 26 years old, this was a turning point in my life. I'm in a church service. This one, no hand of shape, no hand of peace. But this time there's a sermon on talents. And I had always viewed what happened to me as taking away all the talents. But this pastor was talking about, if you have one, three or five talents, you are called to multiply. And I think those of us who are extraordinarily good looking and wealthy and well-versed or whatever it is, we know we have five talents and we multiply freely. Why would we not? And those with three, we try to do our best to multiply too. But I had always felt like the guy with one. And in the reading, this guy with one talent buried it because he wanted to protect it. That's what I had done my entire life. I buried my talents. And then his pastor put on the sermon that was just convicting, that essentially said, it does not matter how you felt. You are called toward greatness. You are called to utilize that for something far bigger than you've been doing in the past. So I hear this 2.5 decades into my life, and it was the turning point. It allowed me to start embracing the story, embracing the brokenness, slowly start, like a little caterpillar does so frequently, go back into the cocoon, have this transformational experience. Eventually, through that cell transformation, find wings, will awkwardly flutter them just a little bit. I gave one talk to 3 Girl Scouts, and then one more talk to 8 Rotarians, and then one more talk to, I think, 20 Kiwanis members. And then, Shelley, over the course of 15 years, I have traveled the world, 50 states, dozens of countries, a couple million people live, just by flapping the wings. But it was one group, one change, one word, one deed at a time. So for those of us who are trying to change the world, me too. But it doesn't happen usually by flying to Ukraine or flying to London or flying to Rome. The transformation we seek starts with the reflection in the mirror, and then with the very first person we see as we step into the day. And that's the transformation I'm trying to implore our audiences to embrace. This is a beautiful gift to first become the change. You mentioned a quote a moment ago. You started quoting Martin Luther King Jr. You don't have to like everybody. You just have to love them. Yeah. You don't have to like everybody. You just have to love them. Well, that's the goal of life. You don't have to like them all, but you have to love them. And you have to start with a reflection in the mirror. And that is a really cool way to begin transformation.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I'm so profoundly impressed with the nurses and the school that you went to. That is something that needs to happen for all general education classrooms, in my opinion, because we spend so much time in special education teaching that one child how to behave, how to be in the classroom.
Right.
But we forget to talk to those who are already there waiting for this person to come to their classroom.
Yes.
And teach them and let them ask questions and to let them know it's okay that someone is different and that it's okay to have questions about that difference. If we never ask questions, we never learn anything.
I'm a social butterfly, to play off your example. I'm a very social guy. In a fraternity, social chairman, president, all the titles. So I'm blessed to have a lot of friends. At our wedding, though, when Beth and I were married, the majority of our friends were from my grade school class. So you have to ask yourself, like, why? Why not more college fraternity? There were a lot of fraternity friends there. Why not high school buddies? A lot of high school buddies. Why not work peers? A lot of work peers. But the majority of our friends, if you look at it as a percentage, were from the grade school class. And the reason why, I think, is because this profoundly difficult experience that fell on me and them, rather than hiding from, we embraced. And I'm looking at the nurses and the teachers now. They embraced and they turned what could have been a very miserable experience for all of us into one of transformation, where these little ones understood what had happened to John and also how they could collaborate and work together to help him going forward. So then when John struggled carrying his backpack, they wanted to step forward. When I couldn't get the lid off those darn big pens, they wanted to be the one. They wanted to help me put the books in the bag at the end of the day. They wanted to sit with me at lunch because they knew it was hard to get that little foil off those sandwiches. So rather than becoming like looking over their shoulder, feeling sorry for him, they became cheerleaders. Why share this with your listeners? Because in a marketplace that feels isolated and is wrapped with the comparative mentality of feeling like they don't stack up. None of us are good enough. None of us are as pretty as the guy next to us or as handsome as that guy or as pretty as the other. None of us have as many friends or as much money. There's an opportunity in the work that we do to make all of us feel like they are part of a solution. And so as we look at these children, some of them having some special needs, some challenges, and we allow the others in the classroom to come around them and to become part of their transformation. It's not only fixing, now I'm using finger quotes, fixing the child with special needs. It is fixing and elevating and transforming every student in that class. So as we look at a broken down society filled with isolation and divisiveness, we have an opportunity to draw them together and pull out the better angels, as Obama would have quoted, but before him, Lincoln, to pull out the better angels of humanity. And so what a cool thing to be part of that gift for those around us.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I have so much enjoyed this and I feel like I could just talk to you for days because we seem to have very similar thought patterns. And I've so appreciated you being here because as I said at the beginning and we talked about a little bit, you know, you are not just known in the St. Louis area, but you are known nationwide, international. You have Live Inspired, the podcast. Tell us a little bit about some of the people that have been on Live Inspired that you have been inspired by.
So in this room, for the folks watching, the wall behind me is family, parents, grandparents, my wife's parents and her grandparents, her siblings, my siblings, our babies. So this is why I work. That wall is, man, I want to go to work today to make the world better for them.
Yeah.
To the right are people throughout history who inspire me deeply. Mother Teresa, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., a guy named Oscar Romero, among many others, who are like unbelievable historical figures but all of them are seen in pictures. Abraham Lincoln seen with his son. Did you know Lincoln was a dad? Yeah, just a dad. Wow. He's a husband, yeah. Probably not even a good husband, but he was these job titles that I am too. Martin Luther King Jr. Did you know before he gave the, I have a dream speech. Mm-hmm. He had kids. He's married. He's a 26-year-old pastor. I think he's in Montgomery, called forward with the bus sit down. Rosa Parks, that's his introductory into the spotlight, a spotlight he did not clamor for. So he's a dad. So I try to be reminded as I look up at this wall, these historical icons. They've had bad breath in the morning. You know, forgot to change the diapers and take out the trash. Ordinary people. So I want to be like them. But the conduit toward them is my podcast wall. So I have a whole wall up here, Shelley, people that I've interviewed, from presidents to best-selling authors to astronauts to people who went to Africa and started missionary work to musicians, the band Journey, police officers, Marines who picked up Purple Hearts, on and on and on and on and on. What they have at their core, though, they are ordinary individuals who saw a need. Anybody can see the need. If you don't believe me, watch the media tonight. They will tell you how bad the world is. But rather than telling everyone else how bad it was, these people did something. They did something. And because of that, they became heroes. They became astronauts. They became Purple Heart recipients. They became phenomenal world-class teachers and authors. So my podcast celebrates the act of ordinary people stepping forward, not making excuses, but making a difference. And so we've had on Brené Brown. We've had on Mel Robbins. We've had on Charlie Plum, this guy who spent 8 years next to McCain in Vietnam, being abused and being tortured. But once they got out of it, they decided not to be victims. Those who spent the majority of the 8 years, up to 8 years in these camps, yeah, went on to become admirals and senators. And Charlie Plum is a phenomenal author and human being. They credit it to that shared difficult experience. And that first word is key, that shared difficult experience. And that's why they went on to do amazing things, whether you voted for McCain or not. I'm not that interested in that. But these people did phenomenal things in their life because of doing difficult things together.
Yeah. And I so appreciate what you said about, you know, we know Abraham Lincoln for the big stuff, but reminding us that he's a dad. He was a husband, you know, and helping us to, like, and when we think about those celebrities, you know, the Mark McGuire's, the Stan Musials, you know, I'm going to pick on our Cardinals, you know, that, yeah, they had great, they're known for their great successes, but they had a whole lot of things that we don't talk about that were not successful. And so it's okay that we're not successful at everything that we attempt. It's okay that we make mistakes. It's okay that we are not A or B or maybe not even C students. Mm-hmm. It's okay that we have those struggles, like the caterpillar, not maybe as severe all the time as the caterpillar going to the butterfly or like what you've gone through, but that we, as you said, we grow through those challenges. There's a song out now, and I'm always really bad at artist names and the titles of the songs, but they talk about being thankful for the scars, because if it wasn't for the scars, they wouldn't know about the good stuff. Mm. And we have to, I don't want to say like try to go out and make scars. We don't have to try. They're going to happen, but not dwelling in those scars and being in that pity party. Yes, it's sad. Yes, feel your feelings, but don't stay there.
That's right.
Get somebody to help you get out if you can't get out of those feelings on your own. You had, like we've talked about, some amazing support system. And, you know, many of our children that have special needs have that support system, but sometimes the support system needs a support system.
That's right.
You know, your parents, your mom needed that guy in that waiting room that night. And we need to be there for those kind of situations and to step up and to be present, as you talked about earlier. So what else is it that you do? I don't want to miss anything. You're a best-selling author. You're an international speaker. You are a husband. You are a father. You are a son. You are a brother. You are.
Yes. Big roles. I'm a servant, man. Like, all we want to do these days is just make a difference in the marketplace. So we are always open to making a difference through stories that come in particular with children who are going through their own trauma. And that can take on a million different looks. But I love nothing more than forming a relationship with a kid who is struggling, with the family of that child who might be struggling, putting our arms around them, walking forward with them, coming back, bringing friends and making a difference. So if you want to learn more about the work that we do, you can visit us at johnolearyinspires.com. So it's johnolearyinspires.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. It's free. You can subscribe to the podcast. It's free. You can check out our books. If you can't buy one, I'll send you one. And you can also just stay in touch with the work that we're trying to do in the marketplace. We think not only do these kids struggle and not only are they worthy, but we think in putting our arms around them and bringing others alongside of us as we do so, that we change not only the life of that child and his or her family, but also those doing the work, those making a difference. So we're just trying to create more experiences like that in the community.
Wow. Thank you. I those don't seem like big enough words to express what I'm really feeling, but they're the only words I have. So thank you again so much for being here, for giving of your time. I know you are an incredibly busy guy, so I appreciate this notch of time that you have given to me and to my audience. And guys, give him some thanks in the comments, and I will be sure that he gets those. Make sure that, you know, if he has inspired you in any way, that you leave those comments, and I will make sure that he gets them. And if you get a chance to hear him speak, go do it. It's well worth your time, well worth any money that you might have to expend to get there or to get into the venue. But yeah, I can't thank you enough. And check things out for me. If you're interested in purchasing my book, you can do that through my website. You can do that through Amazon. Again, it's called Those Who Can't Teach: True Stories of Special Needs Families to Promote Acceptance, Inclusion, and Empathy. Also, if you need somebody to go with you to those IEP meetings, or you need help with the understanding special education, that's me too. I don't often promote myself. I forget to do that part. So I'm glad I remembered to do that today. And again, John, much, much thanks.
Thank you, Shelley. Well done. Keep making a difference.
Thanks.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.